Hi everyone. Before we get started today, I want to talk to you about our newest partner, BetterHelp. Throughout my own grieving process, I have found therapy to be critical in getting me to the point where I am today, and I truly cannot imagine getting through this past year without it. A lot of the world is still in some sort of quarantine or phased opening, and BetterHelp is a perfect platform for accessing therapy during this time because you can do it from wherever you are. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist, and you can have your first session scheduled in as little as 24 hours, which is huge. I know for a lot of people, you hit a roadblock in starting therapy because there's a pressure to really find the right fit. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. It's really easy to change a counselor if you feel like you want a better fit. The therapist you're matched with is available weekly, but you can send messages anytime through the app and get responses between sessions, which makes such a big difference, especially when you are processing a loss. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and they also have financial aid available, which I love and is one of the reasons that I decided to partner with them. We have a special offer for the Grief Coach listeners where you'll get 10% off your first month at trybetterhelp.com/thegriefcoach. That's trybetterhelp.com/thegriefcoach. You can join over 500,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. Investing in yourself is so important. If you've listened to any of the previous episodes, you know how much I prioritize doing the work to get through the grief process, and BetterHelp is a wonderful platform to leverage to do so. Go to trybetterhelp.com/thegriefcoach to get started. Hi everyone, welcome to the Grief Coach. This is your host, Brooke James. If it is your first time listening, I'm so glad that you found us. And if you've listened before, welcome back. Today, I am so excited to have with us Dara Kurtz. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy. We have so much to talk about. I loved all of our pre-calls. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about who you are, what's your story, and what's your grief story?
So my name's Dara Kurtz. I live in North Carolina with my husband and my two daughters, although one is in college now. And I'm a 49-ish mom, and I'm a writer, a podcaster, speaker, and author of I Am My Mother's Daughter, which is such an important book that I never planned on writing. My mom passed away 2 weeks after I had my first child, Zoe, and it was just an incredibly hard time for me. It just was the 20th anniversary of my mom's death. And, when I was going through it 20 years ago, I didn't know really how to even navigate these waters. I was just experiencing such happiness and joy at having this baby, and then just this incredible sorrow of not having my mom there to help me and to guide me and to lean on. When you become a mom, there's all these things that you never thought to ask your mom until you become a mom. And it just really kind of heightened for me the loss. And it really followed me around like my shadow. As my daughters got older, the loss never really seemed, it was always there. And I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know how to talk about it. And I didn't even realize that I was stuck in grief for like really the past 20 years until I sat and wrote this book. And what happened was I found a Ziploc bag of letters that were written to me from the time when I was 9 years old until I graduated from college, mostly from my mom. And thanks to a random discovery, I found the Ziploc bag of letters. And I one night sat on the couch, opened the bag, cried what Oprah calls the ugly cry. And I just sobbed because I felt like I was having a conversation with my mom. And it had been 20 years since I had gotten to do that. And I could hear her voice. I could feel her personality. And I got a much needed dose of wisdom from her, which basically was just kind of a reminder to me of, you know, Dara, life is so precious. And I know she would never have wanted me to be stuck in grief. But I, reading those letters, I kind of got that message that I so needed to hear.
That's so interesting that you say that, stuck in grief, because we really can get stuck. And I don't, it's that old, like, you can't change until you're ready. But I think it's so easy to stay and get stuck in the grief because it's debilitating.
You can't change what you don't see.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I didn't see it. You get stuck in it because it becomes your norm. Mm-hmm. And then you can't, if you don't see it, how can you navigate through it?
Right. And there is so much that we can learn from grief and loss if we're open to it, but it is really hard to be open to it because it's so devastating.
So devastating. Yeah. My mom was my person.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had so many plans. Like when I was little, I know, you know, she would say, one day when I'm a grandmother, we'll do this together. Or one day when you're a mom, blah, blah, blah. And then I found myself remembering all of those things. And as my daughters got older, every little new thing, I wanted to pick up the phone and tell my mom. Or it was just kind of, I realized how much she was missing. And how much we were missing by not having her. And it sucked. It was so hard and so sad. And I felt incredibly cheated and that life had dealt me and my family a bad hand.
Yeah. And well, that goes back to like when people are like, well, they're in a better place, or like God needed an angel. It's like, that's cool, but it would be better if they were here. And like everything happens for a reason. Like, sure, yes. But I wish that it didn't happen like this, and I wasn't learning all of these things that I'm learning and like growing as a person because of this. Like, I would rather not, you know.
So true. For me, it was really kind of getting to the place where I was able to recognize how the grief had really impacted my life and really the way that I raised my daughters, and we could talk about that in a few minutes, but it really affected every part of my life. And it wasn't until I sat and wrote this book and really let myself, gave myself permission to go to some of those places that I was able to even see it and then accept it, you know, accept what had happened. And that's really, I think you have to, you can't find your peace if you don't accept the situation that you're in.
No, and it's such an easy situation to like be in denial of because it hurts to go there.
So much, yeah.
Yeah. I do want to talk about how losing your mom changed how you parent. And I loved what you said a little bit earlier, that you remember her saying all of that. And so now that, like, did you consider that a gift that you even had those conversations so you knew the types of things that she wanted to do that you could then do with your children? Like, I know that's painful. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, I definitely know what you're trying to say. I think there was probably a lot of pain throughout me raising my kids. And it really wasn't until recently that I even said to my daughters, like, did you see this? Like, did you recognize the pain that I was in? Because there were so many times when they were little that I would say, my mom's name was Terry. And they call her Grandma Terry. And I would say, oh, it's Grandma Terry's birthday. Let's go get ice cream sundaes. And that was something that we regularly did. Or my mom, blah, blah, blah. Or we did this when I talked about her a lot because I really wanted my kids to know who my mom was. And I probably overcompensated for that. And I'm sure my daughters, of course, they felt that. They felt that loss. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't.
And kids are so intuitive.
They're so intuitive and so perceptive. Yeah. But it wasn't until recently that I had a conversation with my daughters and I said, look, I was stuck in grief for 20 years and you saw that. And I want to live for a really long time. But if, God forbid, something happens to me, I didn't handle this the best possible way that I could have handled it. And I don't want you to feel like this is the way that you handle something like this, because I would never want you to be stuck in grief for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I would never want you to feel the sadness that I know that they have felt that I hung on to. Mm-hmm. And so that was a really important conversation that I've had with my daughters. And I think we'll continue to have, because I didn't even see it, because I was showing them kind of the way that when a daughter loses her mom, I was showing them a way that a daughter deals with that. I hope they handle it better than the way I showed them how to handle it.
Yeah. But hindsight is 20/20. Like, you don't know. Yeah. And I think I've talked about this before. I would, of course, do stuff differently now with my dad being sick and then in hospice and then dealing afterwards. But when it's happening, you're just doing the best you can.
Yeah. And I think guilt definitely, you know, guilt. It was
heavy. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of guilt, you know, could I have handled the situation better? Just like you said, when my mom was really sick, or should I have done this? Should I have done that? You know, it's just kind of showing yourself a lot of grace and getting to a place where you can say, you know what, I did the best I could with the hand that I was dealt. And I did the best I could when I was trying to raise my kids and deal with the grief at the same time. And we have had so many happy moments. I mean, I don't want you to think that my kids' childhood was laced with sadness, because it wasn't,
right.
but it was still there. I mean, there's no denying that they know how my heart was hurting throughout their childhood.
Yeah, but I think it's also important. I mean, I don't have any kids, but like, so take this with a grain of salt. But I think it's important to like model for kids that like it's okay to be sad.
Absolutely.
And it's okay to miss someone. So my cousin has a little girl who's 2, and she's been starting to ask where his mom is. And his mom passed away when we were in middle school. And they're quarantining at his in-laws. And so she's spending a lot of time with her mom's mom. And so she's like, where's your mom? So they ask, they wonder, they know. And it's it sounds like you did a really beautiful job of sharing who she was and celebrating her. And I think those milestones are so important. So like, there's no right way to do it. There's no wrong way to do it. But I think it's just kids know. And so to not address it, like, that sounds like something that would lead to an issue, because it certainly does in adults when you don't address something.
Pretending that everything's great when it's not great is not necessarily a win.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't help the situation. Yeah, for sure.
I'm wondering, and if you don't want to answer this, you don't have to. How did your daughters react to that conversation? Like, did they say they noticed it?
Yeah, of course. So when I was 42 and my kids were 11 and 14, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And it came literally out of the blue. One day we were fine and everything was great. And then one day I wasn't fine. And while I found it relatively early and I had a lot of things going for me, I went through chemo and radiation and surgery, and I wanted to be as aggressive as possible. And I remember being on the table, and I am going to answer the question, I promise. I remember being on the table having the biopsy and sobbing and saying to this doctor, and this was before we really knew what we were dealing with. And I was saying, you know, I can't have cancer. I can't do this to my kids. I know how hard it is to live in the world without having your mom. I can't do this to my kids. It was really hard for my kids to kind of go through all of that with me. But my youngest daughter, she was 11 when it happened. Recently, she's really been kind of opening up about a lot of the things that she was carrying from when I was sick, when I was going through all that. And, you know, one of the things was just her fear of something happening to me or something happening to my husband. And we had a really beautiful conversation when we were having the conversation about the fact that I felt like I would never want them to be stuck in grief or, you know, to get help or blah, blah, blah. And we had a really beautiful conversation about, you know, how there are no guarantees for anyone, for any of us. And we can't live our lives in fear that something's going to happen to the people we love. And she was really upset. I was really upset. But also, it was kind of okay, what we do is we show the people we love how much we love and care about them every day when we're here. We make the most of our days. We make the most of our time. That was kind of how we shifted that from this place of, I'm so scared that I'm going to lose someone I love, or I don't want to feel the way that I've seen you feel. I don't want to feel that sad, or I'm afraid to love you so tightly because I want to protect my heart. Because when I lose you, I don't want it to hurt as much as you have been showing me your heart hurt.
Yeah.
And that was really powerful. So while there are a lot of hard conversations to have, mm-hmm. I think that we all kind of grew from having them as well.
And like you always do. My dad always used to say that you don't get anything worthwhile unless you allow yourself to be vulnerable.
So true.
And he would always give that to my friends and I in the context of like dating in your 20s in New York City. But like, I think it's true for all relationships, is you have to be vulnerable and like let yourself love deeply, because it's so rewarding, but it's also like terrifying because we're all scared of getting hurt.
It is. And right after my mom passed away, for a little while, I kind of backed away from my family a little bit. Like I backed away from my dad a little bit and my brother. And I kind of said, this is how I said it. I'm like, I'm off the family. That's what I said. I'm
like, oh my God.
Off the family. Because I just felt like I needed to protect my heart. I just, there's a risk with loving so deeply. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because I had, you know, just had a baby at that same time and I loved her so much. And I was afraid to let my heart be hurt again. Mm-hmm. But thank goodness I moved past that pretty fast.
Yeah.
Thank goodness that I was able to release that, because yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the relationships we have with people that matter the most, period.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'll take risking my heart getting hurt any day to have beautiful moments with the people that I love.
That's so poetic and beautiful. I totally agree with you. How did losing your, you kind of addressed this a little bit, but I'm wondering how your grief of losing your mom to cancer, how did that seep into how you reacted to the diagnosis, the treatment plan, spoke with your family about it? Like, because I'm sure it would change how you dealt with that.
It impacted everything, but I didn't see that until I wrote this book.
Wow.
I did not get it. So I had a lot of guilt when I was diagnosed. My mom had a form of cancer called melanoma, which 20 years ago was a very deadly form of skin cancer. It still is, but there was no treatment at the time. Mm-hmm. And she went through just horrible, horrible chemo. And, you know, I watched her be really sick and lose her hair. And she had the most positive attitude the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I never even thought that she was going to die, because she was just so hopeful and so positive. And so when I went through what I had a lot of things going for me, and I felt guilty that my diagnosis was so much better, if you will, mm-hmm. than my mom. So I had a lot of guilt with that. And then just me being sick, and I wasn't someone that sailed through chemo. I threw up a lot.
Are there people?
What? There actually are. There are rock stars. There
wow.
are. I wasn't one of those. Yeah.
My God.
And just, it triggered so much, but I didn't see it. I didn't mm-hmm. know it. And so looking back on it, I made the whole entire process, it was so much more challenging than I think it needed to have been, because I was carrying around this baggage of really PTSD of what I went through and what I was feeling when my mom was sick. I mean, every little thing I compared to my mom, like, you know, when mm-hmm. I lost my hair, I compared it to when she lost her hair, every little thing. Mm-hmm. And it was just because I had never really worked through dealing with her illness or her death. And so a lot of it came up at that time, but I didn't see it. So I was dealing with all of that on top of just trying to get through the day.
Yeah.
And I'm just really grateful that it's been such a big blessing to me, like a gift that I gave myself, letting myself work through a lot of this stuff that, you know, was hard. And there were a lot of times that I was sobbing writing, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, hopefully the reader will feel that and it'll help a lot of people. And also it was a gift that I gave myself.
Yeah. And it sounds like writing was your therapy. I credit so much of me being where I am both to like this podcast, because I'm like very open about grief, but also I started going to a therapist last year. And I think it's like absolutely critical for me. And we were joking about this when the first time we talked, that I'm always like impressed when people write a book, because the podcast started as a book concept. And I was like, oh, that seems really hard. Like, I'm just going to talk instead.
I definitely know that. For sure. Yeah, what you said is really interesting, that you just started going to a therapist. So, I mean, my mom was a counselor, and yeah, that was something that was just always really, I had counselors, you know, throughout my life. That was just something that I always had. But I think there are definitely, you sometimes maybe need if you're going through grief, you need a counselor that focuses on that, or mm-hmm. can help you with what you're dealing with in that space. But also when I was diagnosed, that was the one thing I was like, both my daughters, we have to get them a counselor immediately. So
wow.
That was like the thing we did. Literally, we told them, you know, that I had cancer. And at literally that same day, I said, both of y'all are going to start going to see a counselor next week. That was one thing that really helped, but it took a little while for my youngest daughter to even find the right counselor. That
it's so hard.
It could really help her. Maybe some of it was she wasn't ready to talk about it, or, you know, get there or whatever, but it's not always such an easy thing to find the right person.
No. And just like to share my type A crazy is, because I know it's not easy to find the right person, is I found this website that shows I think they're in like New York and DC. I put grief as a specialist or a specialty, pardon me. And I had phone calls with 8 therapists. And then I went in person to 3, for intro sessions before I found mine. And I think that that's something that I want to like underscore to listeners, like that was time consuming. And you have to pay for the 3 in-person sessions.
Sure.
Some therapists will offer a complimentary introductory session, and most offer a complimentary phone. That like there's all this talk now about like, oh, go to therapy, everyone should go to therapy, but like finding a fit, it's like almost more serious than finding a romantic partner. It's like we're on that level, at least. It's not like you're just gonna like the first person you see. And then I feel like what stops people from wanting to do that search is they don't want to have to like tell the story again and the background, because it's exhausting.
It is exhausting. And I love that you said that, because it's hard to find someone that's going to help you grow, but also challenge you to go to some places that are very uncomfortable to go to. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, I remember sometimes going to my counselor and just leaving and being so frustrated or angry or just not in a great mood.
Yeah. But, and sometimes you get to like do all the work and then they're like, okay, 5 minutes left. And you're like, we didn't even like get to the stuff yet. Like,
what you said is such a good point. It's work to release and let go and grow, and it's uncomfortable and you're being vulnerable and you have to have a good fit and you have to be willing to open up and allow yourself and give yourself permission to go there. And so it took my youngest daughter, who was 11 at the time, like 4 different counselors. Each one of them she stayed with for like months at a time. And then it just wasn't, we weren't getting anywhere. And she was mm-hmm. very anxious. And until today, where she has such an amazing fit, it was so worth it.
Yeah.
To be where she is today. So it's worthwhile. Any of your listeners who are thinking about going to a counselor or wanting so much to find that person, don't give up, because there's definitely a pot of gold at the end of that rainbow.
There is. It's a long rainbow.
But it's a long rainbow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my therapist was like, just recently, I like felt like she was like breaking up with me. She's like, you don't need to come every week anymore. I was like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean? I was like, no, I'm still coming every week. She was like, okay. And then like 2 sessions later, she's like, you're really doing a lot better than you think you're doing. I was like, no, I'm not. Like, and she was like, no, there's like, you have more joy. And
that's a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing, but it is also like
scary. It's scary. She's a security blanket a little bit.
Yeah, and it also, there's this weird underscore of like, if I'm okay, does that mean I don't miss my dad? No, but your brain just does weird stuff. Yeah. Once yeah. you have worked through this. So I also want listeners to know that that's really normal. And I think part of the reason we as a society are so ill-equipped to deal with grief and what's normal and we're embarrassed of like, where are we? And no one wants to talk about it is because we don't really give ourselves the grace, but also talk about how normal it is to be on this roller coaster squiggly line of feelings yeah. and emotions.
The waves, riding the waves. And it's yeah. it's so hard and it's so uncomfortable, but it's amazing to have a podcast like this where people can feel like they're not going through it by themselves or they're not alone or it is normal to feel how they're feeling. 20 years ago, I felt like I was literally the only girl my age who had a baby, who had lost her mom. Everyone else around me had their moms. Every birthday party that I went to, the mom was there. Just all these constant reminders mm-hmm. and people didn't talk about it.
And everyone wants to like hide their messy feelings.
Totally. And I felt like I had to put a smile on my face and have this, you know, cute little baby and pretend like I was totally fine. And I think that's really what happened is I swept my feelings under the rug. I pretended mm-hmm. like I was fine and I got used to pretending like I was fine, but you can't run from grief. It's not going to go away. And so until you're willing to face it, it's still going to be there and it's yeah. going to come out eventually. And so I'm just really grateful that I was able to finally in this season of my life, open up some of that and let it come out.
So can you talk a little bit about what that writing process was like? Did you know as soon as you found the letters that you wanted, when did you know you wanted to turn it into a book? All of that. Because what a gift to be able to have those letters.
Oh my gosh, the biggest gift ever. I mean, I am so thankful. I always say that I have a lot of really beautiful things. I'm very blessed. But at the end of the day, it's a Ziploc bag of letters that is my greatest treasure, my most valuable possession, because mm-hmm. they're a piece of my mom's heart and my grandmother's heart. And it's just being able to connect with them and hear their voices. It's been an incredible gift. So when I read these letters, the first thing I did was I wanted to tell my brother, because he was the only person that I thought maybe would know what I was talking about. So I called my brother and I remember saying, I found the letters from camp and I'm so happy. And do you have your letters? And I remember just silence. And he's like, what letters? And I said, letters that they wrote us when we were at camp. And he's like, I don't have any letters. And silence. And I thought, of course you have letters. You know, it was really funny. Now we kind of laugh about it because I would never want him to feel slighted by our family.
Did he have them?
He doesn't have them. He's like, I said, I guess I got letters, but I didn't save them. And so that's when I realized like what a blessing it was that I had actually saved them throughout the years. But I felt like I was working on another project at the time. I'd written another book before and I so wanted to continue writing. And so I was writing and I was in the process of writing a book. And after I read those letters, I just felt like there was something there. There was something to be shared. I did not know what it was going to look like at all. And I just literally put that other project on. I hit pause on that and just started playing around with it. I had all the letters like all over my table right behind me and they just stayed there. And I just started writing and I didn't know that the book was going to end up becoming a lot about grief and a lot about loss. I had no idea that was going to happen, mm-hmm. but I'm so, like I said, I mean, I'm just so proud of the way that it all sort of happened. And I think it could really help people that are feeling a lot of the feels associated with losing someone that you love.
Yeah. And it's so interesting that you say you didn't realize the book would be about grief. That goes back to our earlier conversation that like, if it's in you, like it finds a way out. And unless you deal with it, it comes out in an unhealthy way. To be able to like pull that deep-seated emotion out of you and to process it is really amazing. Like I did an episode recently where we talked about hospice and I realized like how much I had blocked that out. because it was awful. Like, you know, and I didn't realize like how much I remembered, and because I never think about it because it's so painful. But none of this stuff goes away unless you work through it.
That's it doesn't go away. I mean, it's there. It's inside of us. It's in our subconscious minds, and mm-hmm. I don't feel like we can be the best versions of ourselves or the happiest, most joyful versions of ourselves until we give ourselves permission to let it out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, letting it out, releasing the sadness, doesn't mean that you're letting go of the person. It doesn't mean that you are saying you're not going to be in my life anymore because I'm not feeling sad every day, or I'm not focusing on all of the sorrow or the low vibrational feelings that, mm-hmm. you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
That doesn't mean that that person isn't with you. It means that, okay, now I'm ready to remember my mom in such a joyful, happy way. And I know that she would want that for me. And it was hearing her say things like that in the letters, just hearing how much life meant to her and how grateful she was to have every single day of her life, that made me really realize that, you know what, I don't want to waste one day of my life just hanging on to the sadness, and I think I was afraid to let go of the sadness because I was afraid I was going to lose her if I did that. And then there's that, you know, the guilt, it just, mm-hmm. it's all kind of a circle. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think to anyone listening, there's no anyone that you have lost. I don't think they would want you to hold on to the sadness and let it get in the way of you making the most of every day of your life. You know, I think there's healthy ways to process the grief. And I can speak from experience, I didn't process my grief in a very healthy way for a really long time. And I'm really grateful that I can see that now.
Well, I think it's also like, how do you honor someone who you love?
Yes.
And like, I had this conversation because my dad was older, he was 75. I remember it was like 26 and not dating anyone. And I was like, I feel like I have to find someone so I can have kids. I want you to like know my kids. And he was like, they will know me through you because I'm exactly the same as both of my parents, as like almost everybody is. And that was something that was so hard. And I had forgotten we even had that conversation until after he died. But that was always something that I was really, no, I want him to know my kids, because my sisters are quite a bit older than me. And so he knew their kids.
And I can understand that. He knew who their person was. And you wanted your dad to know who your person was. I think that's so, how could you not?
Right. Exactly. And I think what we forget in our grief and our sorrow and those, like all those low vibration emotions that just like stick with you, is that if you love someone that much, that they did have an impact on you and shape who you are and your being, and the people who the person doesn't get to meet because they passed away still get some of that essence through who you are as a person.
Absolutely. There's such a connection between our past and our future generations, really. It's really like our job in a way to kind of weave the past with the future. I really recognize that I'm just, you know, I'm here today, but I'm just a part of my family's history. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like it's my responsibility to carry the traditions that I was taught from my mom and my grandmothers and teach them to my kids. And then hopefully my kids will feel that it's important to carry that on to their children, because that's how we honor the people that we've loved and lost. Mm-hmm. And that's how we survive into the future, just kind of by weaving it all together.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like if I was listening and I had just lost my dad, I'd be like, oh, that's so nice for these two women that they've gotten here. But I want, again, that listeners to really know that like, this is not somewhere you get right away.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you and I both know it's so hard to love someone and to not have them, to wake up mm-hmm. and not have that person. my mom was my person, and we always spoke at 5 o'clock. That just seemed to be like the time of the day that we spoke. And so for like a year, every day at 5 o'clock, I felt this loss every single day. And I would distract myself by trying to call someone else or have someone else there to take her place. Sometimes you kind of have to feel it. It's like, no one can go through grief for you. You sort of have to like allow yourself to feel the suckiness.
Yeah.
Any sense.
It totally makes sense.
And it doesn't feel good to feel bad.
No, it's really not fun to work through it.
Yeah.
And like, it's really painful because.
Yeah. And triggers. Like you could be totally fine. I remember being at a party. I was totally fine. And then someone said something, and this happened so many times. I know you're going to be able to relate to this. This happened to me. I can't even tell you. I would be completely fine. And then someone would say something like, oh, I knew your mom, or I remember meeting your mom, or blah, blah, blah. And that's all it would take. And I would literally have to go into the bathroom and I would just start sobbing. And sometimes I couldn't even stop crying in the bathroom at a party. My husband kind of got used to me kind of coming out, and he could just look at me and he'd be like, okay, we're going now.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he would say, or he could tell like, okay, you're okay. He just kind of got used to it, the triggers. And I think letting yourself feel those triggers is so important to working through the grief process.
Yeah. And it's like definitely messy and inconvenient at times.
Yeah.
But really, really important. I can think of a couple examples in my own life that like come to mind immediately. But even sometimes in conversation, when my dad will come up and I'll like tear up and don't necessarily cry, but I do just want to, for people who are listening who haven't necessarily lost someone, and I call them like grief adjacent people. I had a friend when my dad was sick and I was traveling for work every week and came back because we had like a nighttime meeting. So I had like my suitcase with me, and then I was supposed to go to a board meeting, and my friend at work was like, how are you doing? And I think it was like the day we found out that he did in fact have cancer, and or like how serious it was. And I just like burst into tears and was like, I have to go. I have a board meeting in 15 minutes across town. And she was like, go home. Like, what? No, like you're not going to another meeting. And so I think the fact that your husband would just be like, no, we're leaving now, because it's so hard sometimes, because you want your life to be normal, and you like, I think it's part of wishing you weren't experienced what you were, that you're like, no, it's fine. I can do all the things that I did before, and it's okay, and I'll be fine, and I'll stop crying. But it's like, no, that like, not, maybe not right now, like maybe next time, but right now, no. Yeah. Do you want so badly your life to be normal and like wish it didn't happen? I feel like is where that comes from.
You wish it hadn't happened. It's so true. And just, I felt so anxious to be in the world without my mom being in the world with me, if that makes any sense. Like, that just really scared me. Like, if I needed her, she's not here to be there for me if I needed her. And then when I was sick, my mom wasn't there for me when I needed her. I don't know. It's scary to be in the world without having that person with you. And so it's just all those feelings also. But also recognizing that they're still with you, and that you can talk to them, and that, you know, that's really kind of nice as well.
Do you talk to your mom?
I talk to my mom every day. Yeah. Every day for sure. And whenever I see a butterfly, that's kind of like my thing with my mom. Like,
oh, mine's cardinals.
Oh yeah. It's just, I mean, there's so many random stories that I could tell you of when like a butterfly just like came and was just right there. And now when I see a butterfly, I just say hi to my mom. And I just, you know,
I say hi, dad, when I see a cardinal.
Yeah.
In my head, normally, because I'm with other people, I say it inside.
Yeah. Now my daughters do it. When they see a butterfly, they say, oh, hi, Grandma Terry. And I love that. So, you know, we choose to believe that that's my mom saying hi to us. And
I love that.
We do too.
We've been talking for a long time. I feel like we could keep talking for a long time. Maybe you can come back, but would love if you could tell listeners where to find you online, any last words of wisdom, whatever you want.
So you can find me at my website, crazyperfectlife.com. My book is I Am My Mother's Daughter, Wisdom on Life, Loss, and Love, available on all the platforms. On my website, I also have 5 free gifts that people can download if they buy the book. So those are gifts that, thanks to COVID, I didn't have anything to do but create fun gifts for people. So they're really nice. They're like sharing journals and just lots of little tools to help you connect with the people that you love. But
I love that.
Thank you. And I'm on social media, of course, Instagram, Facebook, at Crazy Perfect Life and at Crazy Perf Life on Insta. I guess what I would say to anyone listening is just, we can't change what happened as much as we want to change what happened. So for me, once I gave myself permission to accept what happened and allowed myself to feel all the feels and stop pretending that I was fine when I wasn't fine, that's when I was able, I think, to start to begin healing. And it takes so much energy to pretend like you're fine when you're not fine. It's almost exhausting to show up to the world pretending like everything is perfect when it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. So just giving yourself the grace to say I'm not okay is actually perfectly okay.
Absolutely, 100%. All right, well, thank you so, so much. I'm so glad that you got to come on the show, and so much good advice. I'm really excited about this episode. So
thank you. I feel like we could talk forever, and I can't wait till your book comes out one day. Let me know what I can do to help and support you, because I'm excited.
Oh my God, you're an angel. Thank you. We will talk about it. All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you everyone for listening. If you like the podcast, please leave a nice review on Apple Podcasts, because it helps other people looking for this type of content be able to find it easier. You can find us at www.thegriefcoach.co and on social at the_griefcoach. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.